it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
And welcome back to a brand new DNF1 F1 podcast. I hope that you're all doing well, and thank you as always for being here. So we're in another interlull. Obviously, got a little bit of time to wait until the Miami Grand Prix next weekend. But in the meantime, I thought it might be good to have a discussion about one team in particular that is generating headlines, but not necessarily for the reason you might expect. Now, of course, I'm talking about the Mercedes team, who have had a less than spectacular start to the season, shall we say. But we're going to get into the meat of that, of why that has been, and perhaps what that means for the team going forward into 2025 and beyond. And joining me on this episode, I thought it'd be great to bring back a guest that we had recently, where we were talking about Mercedes prospects for the 2024 season, to have a little bit of a review based on what we said previously. And of course, I am referring to the brilliant editor-in-chief for We Are The Race, and of course, the host of my favourite podcast right now, the Bring Back The V10s podcast. That is, of course, Glenn Freeman. Glenn, first of all, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you on again. How have you been?
Yeah, well, thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me back. It means I couldn't have done too bad a job first time around, so happy to be here again.
Well, I'm just grateful that someone like yourself can take the time to come on a show like mine. So you're always welcome on the DNF1 podcast anytime. And of course, to talk about Mercedes, no less. So definitely a great topic of discussion. And first things first, Glenn, I've got to ask, when we were talking about Mercedes before, we were not necessarily bigging them up as they were going to be the team that were going to try and dethrone Red Bull in this dominant ground effect era that they're enjoying. But we kind of had a bit more optimism for their chances of what their prospects might have been. So to see after the first five races that this is the worst start that they've had since 2012, and even go as far as saying Lewis Hamilton has had arguably the worst start to his F1 to an F1 season in his career. What do you make of that? How surprised were you to see that?
It's when we were talking about it before, it was the thing for Mercedes feared might happen in the. You know, our optimism, if you will, was based around the fact they spent a large chunk of 2023 telling us it's okay, we know what we've got to fix. There's all these things that we can't fix with the current car because under the cost of a new chassis mid-season, you can't do a B-spec car, but we know what we've got to do. So it's all around fix the chassis and then all the fundamentals around it will start to take care of themselves. But even when I was hearing all of that, I thought, if you've truly understood these regulations, and I think what we've seen from the first part of 2024 confirms what we maybe feared after seeing their first two cars under these regs. The third one would confirm that they still don't understand how to get the best out of these regulations. So I did have a nagging feeling that this might happen, but, you know, they were very forthright about what was wrong or what they thought was wrong with the 23 car. So we took them at their word.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And as soon as we saw the W15 unveiled and all of the positive words that were coming from the likes of Toto Wolff, Lewis Hamilton, George Russell, it did seem that on the surface of it, And from what we saw of the car itself and how it looked, Mercedes may have looked like they got to grips with this new regulation set, perhaps for the first time. And it certainly surprised me that they were struggling from the get-go. I was kind of, as you said, I wasn't expecting Mercedes to all of a sudden become the ultimate team that's going to dethrone Red Bull, perhaps in the same way that Red Bull rose up in the late 2010s to challenge Mercedes and then ultimately beating them in 2021, or at least Max did, but of course we won't go down that rabbit hole again. It definitely surprised me that Mercedes were, relatively speaking, probably in a worse off position than they've ever found themselves in this new rule set. And that's probably the part that surprised me the most. Not the part that they haven't been able to get on top of these regs yet, but the fact that they look like they've made less progress than the teams around them.
Yeah, I think you, when that car's at its worst, you can make an argument that it's the fifth best car on the grid. Certainly compared, well, at least compared to one of the Aston Martins in Fernando Alonso's hands. So yeah, they're not creeping forwards towards Red Bull. And as you say, they're not making as much progress as the other teams that are working it out. Ferrari have been the team that have delivered the most on the promises they made late last year. McLaren maybe talked themselves up a little bit too much at the end of last year when things looked really good. Aston Martin got a bit lost last year, but are starting to work it out. So all of those teams, you can see a pathway. They're still a long way behind Red Bull, but there feels like there's a direction. Mercedes right now feel totally directionless.
Yeah, I think directionless is probably the right way of putting it, because I'd almost want to ask you, Glenn, is there any particular reason why you think it hasn't worked out for Mercedes or they're still struggling? But I feel like if you were able to give me the 100% definitive answer as to what that is, you'd probably fall into that trap of knowing more than Mercedes do at this point in time.
Well, I'd be working there and getting paid a lot of money to fix it.
I should hope so.
Yeah. At its most basic, there's clearly a fundamental lack of understanding of what makes these ground effect cars tick. And whether that is exactly how you generate the downforce from the underfloor, or whether that's how you manage the platform so you can control the downforce, that's a bit we don't know. I suspect it's probably a bit of both, because there are times where it seems that maybe the Red Bull doesn't necessarily have the most downforce, but it has the easiest or best access to the downforce that it's capable of almost at all times. That's the bit they've mastered. So it's likely that the Mercedes isn't simple, we've got to fix one thing. It's probably a combination of factors. And it's the fact that it's taken them, a team this big and this talented, it's taken them this long to work it out, is partly a reflection of the fact that with so much of the performance of the car related to ride heights and the underfloor and all the stuff you can't really see, I think it's harder to play catch up now than it was under previous regulations, where it was all the top surfaces that were generating your performance. So if somebody brought something out, whether it was a change to their wing or to their barge board or their side pod, it was all top surface stuff that you could see, and then you could try and understand, go, okay, so they've done that because of this, and then we go, you don't necessarily copy it, you don't do a complete copy unless you're Racing Point, you then go and do your own version. But unless Mercedes could look underneath the Red Bull every single weekend and see what's going on there and try and understand a bit of that and look at the suspension internals and all that sort of thing, it's just you have fewer cues to take from your opposition, because it's a lot of it's borderline invisible. So it's a massive challenge.
Do you think that's something the F1 community, not just, you know, accredited journalists and experts in that industry, but also fans, probably don't appreciate as much in this current rule set, is that, you know, you talk about Mercedes, all the, you know, in past regulations, it was more about the aero bits on the top that was generating the performance. And, you know, now it's more focused on the bits you don't see, not necessarily the suspension, which Adrian Newey talked in great lengths about before this rule set was in place and how significant that would be, but other things like being able to have the ride height of the car as low to the ground as possible without generating the porpoising. It's all those things that you don't necessarily see that seem to be creating the bulk of performance for a lot of these teams. And you know, just to throw Ferrari into the mix, as you mentioned earlier, that's a team that I very much remember a lot of people looking at them feeling a little underwhelmed because there wasn't all those fancy aero bits on the tops within the regulations or nothing special that you could see would think, wow, this team's made a big step forward. But yet they're the team that looked like at this point in time could, and I emphasize the word could here, make that challenge to Red Bull, whereas Mercedes are still unsure of how to make this car go fast.
Yeah, the key thing for me last year is around the time of Monza, where Ferrari obviously did a car that we effectively called a Monza special. They put a lot into it. But behind all of that, they were saying that development-wise, they finally understood what they needed to do with the car. So they made last year's car a lot better at the end of the year, which helped Charles Leclerc because he'd struggled with the car when it wasn't in its best window. And Ferrari, in quite a sensible way, talked the talk of saying, right, we now understand it. We get to every weekend. The car does what we expect it to do, good or bad. The setup we come into a weekend with is working the way we want it to. Every time we think we've made an improvement, it does improve it in the way we expected. And they said we can build up all this knowledge now, can go into making the 24 car a more refined version of this. I think that's exactly what they've done. So I had more faith in Ferrari late last season than I did Mercedes. And again, like we said about Mercedes at the start, when they start telling you they know what they need to do and that they've worked it out, you have that nagging feeling of, do you really though? And with Ferrari, I was so convinced by what they were saying because they were saying it in quite an understated way that I didn't want them to be wrong. So I was quite pleased that they've effectively emerged. They are the most credible. Threat isn't the right word, but they are really leading the pack on most weekends. Obviously, they got it a bit wrong in China.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're certainly not perfect, but like you said, I think I remember watching towards the back end of the season and Mercedes and Ferrari weren't too far apart in terms of performance. There was that time after Japan, at least, where Ferrari looked like they'd understood some of the issues that had, you know, held their car back. And obviously they made a lot of changes and have made good steps forward. Obviously they have a long way to go, but it is quite encouraging compared to the position Mercedes are in. And Mercedes have been very positive with the language about their car earlier on in the season before we really got going. And then ever since, it's been not necessarily downplaying what they're capable of doing, but it's more a case of just replaying that rhetoric of, yeah, we're trying to figure things out. We haven't quite got there yet, but we're getting there. And it's obviously, you know, a long way to go. But I kind of get the impression with Mercedes, Glenn, and of course, correct me if I'm wrong in this, but like you said, I don't get that impression from Mercedes right now that they truly understand how to fix this car. And I like Ferrari's position last year when they were perhaps second-guessing a few things before Fred Vasseur came in and obviously has helped turn things around. Mercedes don't have the luxury of time anymore because we're getting close to the end of this regulation set where the focus is very much going to be on 2026. And at this point, we still don't know what the aero regs are going to be for that. So obviously everyone's twitching to try and find out what they are and focus on that. Mercedes don't really have the time to get this car right for 2025 if they don't already understand how to fix it right now.
Yeah, and I think the change in rhetoric that you mentioned there is we've seen through what people like Toto Wolff and James Allison and the like have been saying, we've seen that gradual dawning on the people of Mercedes that they have got it wrong again, that they haven't solved it, that all the things, I believe them, that late last year they thought they had the solutions. And you can tell, you can just see them like deflating in front of us because they've realised that whatever those solutions were, haven't worked. And as I say, we're not just benchmarking them against Red Bull here, you're benchmarking them against the rest of that leading pack, and there's no signs that they're getting any closer. So I imagine they feel similar to what you said there, that they'll be thinking, well, we've got it wrong again, what on earth do we do for 25 now?
Yeah, very much so. Do you think that's that opinion of Mercedes when we sort of take what they have to say at face value and trust them to be able to deliver on that. Do you think that's come from the reputation that they've built up over the last decade, where they have been the benchmark? They have been the team that has won multiple world championships and dominated majority of this turbo hybrid era up until the last few seasons. Do you think that that reputation of them has helped us as fans and followers to kind of give them that trust, whereas other teams, as I said, we'll chuck Ferrari in here, they've got the best reputation of anybody in the sport, but in recent years, or the last two decades, Ferrari say that they figured out or they're going to be world champions. You look at them and think, yeah, but are you? Is that what's happening at Mercedes? Are we trusting them because of that reputation?
Maybe up to this point, but I think that trust is gone now. You know, if Mercedes say, come out after the summer break and say, right, this time we really do know what we're doing. This time we have cracked it. Or, you know, we've hired a bunch of people from Red Bull, or we've stolen the drawings of the RB20. I'm not saying they have. But if they come out and are absolutely certain that they've cracked it, which I don't think they'll do, but if they did, I don't think we would believe them this time. You know, like what you said there about Ferrari, that is based on nearly two decades of effective failure, really, for a team of that stature. Mercedes is fast tracking itself to that position because they've fundamentally got this very wrong so far. And also, Red Bull is so good that any of these other big teams that get it wrong at the moment are massively exposed. If you, not so much in the early hybrid era, but if you go back to the final years of the V8s, when Red Bull had the best car then, the teams they were beating would occasionally still win races. So there were not very good Ferrari years in that spell. You know, all right, Alonso fought for the title in 2010 and 2012, but in 11 and 13, Ferrari weren't great, but they still won a handful of races. McLaren, even in their not so good years, would win a handful of races. Mercedes won a couple in 2012 and 2013. That's not happening at the moment because Red Bull is just this relentless kind of punishing machine that's not giving anybody an opportunity, really, other than very occasionally Carlos Sainz and Ferrari.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Yeah, and I think if my maths is right, based on the current trends, we have to wait up until Hungary, I think, before we see Carlos Sainz on the top step of the podium, or at least Red Bull falling off their perch for one race every now and then. But no, you're right. Relentless is definitely the word I think I would describe Red Bull. And I think over the last decade, I suppose, is one, you know, even not so much the V8 era, but definitely in the V6 era, you can definitely take Red Bull on their word when they're looking confident and upbeat about their prospects with their car, because more often than not, they're definitely coming to the fore with something pretty special. Whereas, as you said, Mercedes and Ferrari, by comparison, they can win the odd race here and there, but at the moment, you can't seem to trust them. But maybe that tide is turning. We'll have to wait and see. In terms of correlation, we hear this a lot, and I think Toto Wolff has talked a lot about this, James Allison quite recently. There seems to be a lot of issues correlating the data on the sim and in the wind tunnel to what is actually happening on the track. Do you think that's part of the issue, Glenn, that Mercedes are facing in relation to, you know, adding more go faster bits on the car, but not being able to extract that downforce in the right manner? Do you think that the simulation wind tunnel tools may be up for scrutiny at Mercedes?
That's probably one of the biggest problems they have, actually. You talk to our F1 journalists who are in the paddock on a sort of race by race or week by week basis. When Mercedes get to the track, things they add to the car or setups they try on the car don't do what their simulations or their data has told them they're going to do. So that's part of the reason they're still so lost this far into this regulation cycle, because they've had loads of stuff they can try. The issue is that they try this stuff, quite a lot of it looks quite good in simulation, and then they get to the track and it doesn't behave in the same way at all. So that is a big part of what's going wrong for them at the moment. And That's so hard because you've got these tools that are supposed to be your guide. And if you get to the point where they are telling you things that you can't trust, it makes it really hard to know what you should do next. So as well as looking at, right, what do we need to do with this car? What are we missing that other people are doing? They have got an issue of, well, how do we fix the simulation? Because if the work we're doing at the factory isn't resulting in the real world in what we think it's going to, what on earth do we try next?
Yeah, I often wonder if this is the F1 version of what we see with a few major football teams that go for a transition phase where, you know, they've been knocked off their perch, they've been dominant for a long, long time, and they're struggling to find answers as to how to get back, and they apply some short-term fixes and solutions here and there, put their chest out and say, look, we know how to fix this, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and things are going to be rosy, and then they're not. It almost feels a little bit to me that perhaps Mercedes are in that position as well, where perhaps they're hanging on to this golden era that they've enjoyed, and perhaps not answering the difficult questions or asking the difficult questions of themselves in terms of how to go through this transition where they're not successful and try and rebuild these foundations again and try and get back to where they were. Because right now, year after year, as we've seen in this ground effect era, and maybe this is just my opinion on this, but it feels like Mercedes perhaps aren't being honest enough with themselves and say, look, this isn't working, we need to fix this, it's going to take time, and just hope that their fan base will be patient with them to achieve that.
I think they're asking themselves tough questions now. I'd say the picture you painted there was maybe more the case in the first 12 to 18 months of these races. I think there was when they still had the faith in their simulation tools and the work they were doing, and the structure was different in the team. I think they were going, no, we're Mercedes. We're a big deal. We do get this right eventually. And I think there was a belief, certainly in 2022 and maybe the early part of 2023, that they weren't as far away as maybe it turned out they were, and as far away as they are now. Then there was a belief that all we've got to do is turn one corner and it'll all come together, because we're not that far away. We've never got it this wrong before. This is a blip and we'll sort it out. I think there is a realization, you know, these people aren't stupid, they're blind. But they can see what's going on. They can see how far away they are. And I'm sure there is a lot of internal scrutiny at the moment. It doesn't mean they have the answers, but I'm absolutely sure that they know how bad this is now, and it will be taken very seriously. But that doesn't really help you if you don't yet know why you're getting it wrong.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that's a fair point. You know, it's definitely not a reflection of Mercedes this season, but it has been the case, I think, you know, as you said already, the last 12, 18 months before that. And before any Mercedes fans listen to this start coming for me in the comments, well, I've seen Ferrari do this for about 16 years before Fred Vasseur come in. So, you know, I've definitely seen it happen. But in terms of the drivers themselves, you know, we've talked a lot about the team already. Lewis Hamilton, I think, is probably the best place to start. It's been a very difficult season for him. Obviously, since we last spoke, Glenn, we had that bombshell news that he was joining Ferrari in 2025. Now, I don't want to plant a seed here or imply that perhaps Lewis has somewhat mentally switched off a little bit because he's more looking ahead of where he's going to be next year rather than where he is right now. But are you surprised at how difficult he's had it in this Mercedes? Albeit it's not an easy Mercedes to get on top of, but in previous years when Mercedes have had problems, Hamilton has usually been that reliable source where Mercedes can extract performance from at the highest level. But it just hasn't really happened for him, with the exception of what we saw at the sprint in China.
Yeah, I think Lewis probably struggles to deal with the realisation that yet again, I've got a car that's not up to the job. We know that in 2022, maybe a bit of 23, I think it was more of a 2022 thing, he was doing a lot of setup experiments for the team. Again, just trying to uncover something that could lead them to an answer. He's experimenting this year, but it seems to be more led by him this time rather than the team going, look, Lewis, can you just go try this? You're the experienced driver. I think he's probably so frustrated that it hasn't worked that he is off clutching, looking for something that might just make it all click. And so I think that's why he's having worse weekends than Russell, most likely. On your point about, you know, is he checking out a bit because he's looking ahead to Ferrari? I'm sure he's looking enviously at the Ferrari and wishing he was in it now. And I'm sure he's very excited to get into it next year, because as we said earlier, if Ferrari are on a trajectory now where they're going in the right direction, that's brilliant if you've got a contract that tells you you're going to be driving one of those cars next season. I don't think he'll check out, partly because it's such a long season. If you check out for what we got left, 18, 19 races, that's a long time to be hauling yourself around the world, not really feeling bothered. And you've got to stay on the top of your game, because you're going to jump into a Ferrari next year with an established teammate who that team in some ways has been built around up to now. And you're going to have to, you have to be at the top of your game, and you're going to have to make an impression. So while I'm sure he wishes he was in the Ferrari already, I'm sure he also realizes that he's got to make the most out of 2024 in whatever way he can, even if all that serves in the end is making sure that he arrives at the start of next year as sharp as he can.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I want to be fair to Lewis, because I don't want to imply that he has checked out, because I don't believe that to be the case at all. I mean, you mentioned the setup experiments, and that was going to kind of lead on to my next question, because we saw a lot of this in 22 and 23. Lewis was doing a lot of the work for the team in that regard. And obviously they were receiving the benefits of that throughout the season whilst he was still able to churn out some very good performances, particularly in the race. And of course, that pole position in Hungary not too long ago that a lot of people forget happened, but it definitely did. it's crazy. You know, you look back at, I mean, obviously when we look back at the last time Lewis won a race, and we have to go as far back as Jeddah 21, which is ridiculous, but we often forget about the pole in Hungary 22 as well. So, yeah, it does say a lot to his talents. It's still, you know, still there in aplomb. But in terms of the setup experiments, a lot of people have speculated, why is Lewis always seemingly doing the setup experiments? And it often raises the questions, is it something that Lewis has, you know, forced for this season that he's happy to do, as you've mentioned earlier? Or is it a case of Mercedes learn more from Lewis doing it rather than asking George to do it? I mean, what's your take on that?
I think that was it in the beginning. I think they wanted to disrupt George kind of acclimatizing to the team. So they say, right, George, you and your engineer go off and do what you want to do, make it work the best for you. And Lewis was the experienced driver. You should get better data and better feedback from having him run the tests. And he was happy to do that. And like I say, that's not as much the case now. This is more led by Lewis now. I think that's a sign of a frustration of going, well, nothing works with this car. It's incredibly unpredictable to drive. So we might as well, or I might as well, go and try some stuff out and just see if we almost have a happy accident at some point where we hit upon something that works, and then we can share it with George. I think there may be some doubts within Mercedes about how long that plan should continue. But yeah, ultimately, as we said earlier, I think in many ways, this car, relative to its competition, is worse than the previous two. So Lewis's experiments, I think, are a reflection of the fact that everybody at that team is maybe scrambling a bit at the moment, because, you know, it's really hit home now that this car isn't up to it and is a long way off of being what they need just to turn things around.
Yeah, but no, it's a very good point. It is a lot of head scratching at the moment. And yeah, I think, as we alluded to earlier, I think Lewis is very much reminiscing about how things were a lot easier for him at Mercedes in the past, and probably looking forward to what's ahead in the Ferrari, and hoping that that may turn out to be a car capable of challenging, if not beating, Red Bull for 25. Of course, you know, I'm being optimistic here and looking forward to it myself, but I think we have to be realistic for the time being and see how things play out. In terms of George Russell, because we haven't really talked too much about him yet, what have you made to his start of the season? Because as I said, you know, it's a difficult car to get the most out of at the moment. But I think, in fairness to George, he's been able to extract very good performances, or at least a lot of consistency out of that car, particularly in the races, very much cropping up in the top six or seven spaces at almost every race. Now, I know that's not where Mercedes want to be, but considering what the car is capable of in terms of outright performance, which we probably both agree is around fourth, fifth fastest at most circuits this season, it's not bad going for George Russell in that regard.
No, I think he's doing as good a job as you can. The key thing that you said there was kind of what the car's capable of. And I do feel that on most weekends, whatever Lewis is doing, whether he's experimenting or whether something's going wrong and he's just outside of his kind of optimum window, I feel that George gives us an indication of where the car is, where it should be. I do feel that on most weekends he's roughly getting out of it what's possible. So yeah, I think he's doing a fine job. Ultimately, the limiting factor at that team at the moment is the car. It's not the drivers. And yeah, like I say, we were talking about Lewis with the experiments and that sort of thing. George isn't doing that. And I wonder if at some point Lewis will stop doing that. And then we'll kind of see them both roughly in the same sort of place. And then that'll be something else interesting to look at, because we don't really have a clear comparison on how those two hold up to each other at the moment, because Lewis is off doing his own sort of crazy thing. Meanwhile, George is kind of beavering away, just trying to do what the car's capable of.
Yeah, and I think that's important to remember. As this season goes on, I think we're going to see more of that involvement from George in that regard, in terms of setup experimentation and driver feedback, whereas Lewis will obviously be faded out, for lack of a better way of putting it, because obviously he's going to be elsewhere. And the last thing that Mercedes will want is Lewis sharing any secrets with his new employers. At this point in time, with all respect, I'm not sure what they could learn from that, but I'm sure there's plenty.
I don't think they'd want them, would they?
No, probably not. But you never know. There might be a small snippet of information. I mean, we all saw that crazy innovation they made with the front wing, which was quite interesting. You know, so it's always going to be little tidbits like that. I mean, I remember talking to Craig Scarborough about this, and he gave a really, really fascinating insight as to how Red Bull had picked something up from a Haas a few years ago and applied that to their own car. And it just shows that every team can offer something. It's not necessarily, oh, you're inferior to us because you're slower, so we're not going to take anything from your car and apply it to our own. I mean, you mentioned Alonso in 2012. Ferrari took half the rear end of the Sauber, applied that to their car as a B-spec, and nearly won a world championship with it. So there is definitely value to be had from other competitors, even if they're slower than you. On the George Russell point, as I said, I think it's really important, because we're going to see a lot of that, I think, as the season goes on, where he's more involved in the experiments. I also think it's worth noticing how he has developed as a driver at Mercedes. It's his third season now, I think. And, you know, in that time, there's been a lot of questioning of his capabilities as being the lead guy for the team going forward post-Hamilton, which of course we're going to be seeing next season. And at this point in time, Glenn, George, seventh in the World Championship, you know, ahead of Fernando Alonso, who a lot of people have been singing Fernando's praises for some of the peaks that he's achieved this season in the Aston Martin. But when you look at the scoreboard, George Russell's beaten him. And I wouldn't exactly say people have been glowing about George Russell. I think it's a testament to the reliability that perhaps George has lacked in the Mercedes so far. But he looks like he's shown it this year, albeit in a slower car than he'd probably like to be driving right now.
Yeah, the tricky thing is, if George had come in for 2020 and 2021, we would have a definitive idea now of if he is the successor to Hamilton as that team's leader. But he came in, in terms of getting that answer, he came, and for his own success, he came in at the worst time. He came in as the team dropped the ball, and they haven't found the ball yet to pick it back up. So it is harder. The craziness around Hamilton and Hamilton's sort of experiments, which means his performance fluctuates, also means you can't just look at them both in that pack behind Red Bull and go, well, we can just judge these two a few positions down the grid. There have been times where it looked, you know, I think when the car was bad initially in 2022, it felt like George got on with it because he'd come from a Williams. He was used to driving a bad car. He was used to being down the back of the grid. He just got on with it. Took Hamilton a while to get his head around it. Then I felt that Lewis did get on top of it and do a better job. Last year, again, I'd say they were quite evenly matched, and maybe Hamilton was slightly more consistent in the middle of the season. This year, it's been impossible to tell up to now. So Mercedes have an idea than we do, because they've got a lot more data. They'll be able to see exactly how George is performing. But from the outside, it's very difficult to tell. We know he's talented. He's a Grand Prix winner. He should, if he's ever in a good enough car, he should win races again. You can't say right now for certain if he'd ever be a championship caliber driver. But that's partly because he's not yet had a car to prove it.
No, I think that's very fair, because, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about when Daniel Ricciardo joined the Red Bull team in 2014, and he had that great season where he picked up a few race wins, and Vettel was completely nowhere, four-time world champion, completely struggling. And I can't remember who it was that said it, but it really, really made me think about it in the way that Ricciardo has come from a difficult Toro Rosso car, and he knows how to handle and get the most out of a poor performing car and deal with those ailments in the right way. Whereas someone like Vettel is used, especially with the blown exhaust era, was used to just planting his foot and the car would stick and he could just go as fast as he wanted to. So in a way, it's a bit like what we're seeing with Hamilton and Russell in that regard. And it's not for me to say that Hamilton doesn't know how to handle a slow car. I don't believe that at all. But there are certain experiences that George would have had in the Williams when they were struggling as bad as they were when he was there that he can take into this Mercedes and say, look, I know it's got some issues, but there are ways in which he can get around it that perhaps he has a bit more experience to lean on.
Well, it comes back to what we said earlier about just maximising the potential of the car. If you're used to driving bad cars, and, you know, let's face it, the Williams is George drove a lot worse than the Mercedes is in now. We're not saying they're comparable. But you do get used to going, right, what's the maximum this car is capable of? Let's go and achieve that. Hamilton probably still goes into every weekend going, how can I, well, I doubt he's thinking now, how can I win a race? But he'll certainly be thinking, how do we drag this car up onto the podium? He probably doesn't go into a weekend going, how do I make sure I finish sixth or seventh if that's what this car is capable of? So it is a mindset thing. The Vettel 2014 comparison is a good one. Obviously, it came as a shock to Vettel after four championships in a row to no longer have the best car. I think he also felt a massive sense of injustice that really it was all Renault's fault and that he had a bad engine. So he and Red Bull were lashing out at Renault. He was lashing out at the hybrids in general, saying that, you know, they were too quiet and they'd ruin the spectacle and all that sort of thing. So he just sort of, he went on the attack against F1 in general, and he looked a little bit spoiled because it looked like a guy who'd been winning was no longer winning, and now he had kind of sour grapes about F1 and his whole situation. And obviously, before that year was out, he decided, you know what, I'm not going to stick around to see how this plays out. I'm going to go to Ferrari, which was probably the right decision at the time. And now it took Lewis a bit longer, but he's made the same decision as well.
Yeah, I'm sensing a lot of hallmarks there. It was all just ringing in my head. It's like, oh, where have I seen this before? But I'm hoping for a happier ending to this particular story than the one with Seb. But yeah, you know, as I said, as a fan of your show, Glenn, I'd be lying to myself if I saying, look, I know Vettel's spitting the dummy out, but is he wrong about his criticism? Yeah, to a certain degree. But anyway, let's talk about some of the future prospects at Mercedes before we finish this episode off. Obviously, we now know that Fernando Alonso has signed an extension to stay with Aston Martin on a multi-year deal, the length of which, of course, he's been quite coy about and what that form will take. But that's pretty much left Mercedes with an open goal at the driver that we think at this time is their plan A option, and that's Kimi Antonelli. What are your thoughts on this one, Glenn? Because Kimi Antonelli has been rightly touted as one of the hottest prospects in the young driver market and a potential for Verstappen. Some people have gone as far as saying of the future. Very high praise indeed. But he's only 17. Obviously, because he's too young, he hasn't quite got the super license yet, although that will change when he's 18 in August. In your opinion, is it too soon for Mercedes to really consider promoting a driver of this potential at such a young age, next season, potentially?
It might be, but I admire the bravery in potentially doing it. I love it when sort of interesting things and surprises happen in the driver market. So I would admire Mercedes if they go for it. I was going to say take that punt, but they'll have so much data on him by the time they make that decision that it won't feel like as much of a punt to them. Also, they kind of have if he goes into Mercedes next year, there's a fair chance he'll almost have a grace period, because I don't think they're not going to be expecting to have a championship caliber car next year. So he can go in relatively low expectations, get to grips with F1, and ultimately fast track his learning process. They did it differently with George Russell. They had him at Williams arguably for 1 year too many, probably. So they will know what you can get out as a driver. They will know what you can get out of going and driving a car that's closer to the back of the grid. So if they think he's as good as they say he is, and, you know, you talked about the kind of the hype around him, a lot of that has come from Mercedes hyping him up. Let's find out. I think it's great. It's so rare now that a top team will get that brave obviously Red Bull put Verstappen in after a year and a bit, a handful of races, and they snapped him up to put him in the top team from Toro Rosso. That was great. Let's see how a rookie does in a front running car. I'd be fascinated to see it. I think it would be great. We can't see enough from the outside from what he's doing in F2. You know he hasn't turned up there as a rookie and started wiping the floor of everybody. That might be because the car isn't quite up to it yet. Prema has still got to get their heads around the new F2 car. But the telltale signs for Mercedes will be in the 2021 car testing that he's doing. That will give them an idea of how ready he is to at least... He can't go to those tests and learn how to race an F1 car, but they will find out how good he is, how quick he is in terms of picking up if you can drive an F1, or how quickly you can drive an F1 car at the limit. So, as you say, it really looks like they're leaning that way. And it's a bold decision when Carlos Sainz is still on the market, who would be an absolute proven driver at that level. So if they go for it, let's see. It'll be fascinating.
It is fascinating. And like yourself, I'm excited by the prospect of something like that happening. And I know a lot of us were quite intrigued by the Verstappen story when he came into F1 at Toro Rosso. He had that test when he was 15 in Japan when they didn't have the super license rules on, you know, 18. You had to be 18 to drive an F1 car in at least in a race condition. And of course, you know, going on to great success from then on with the Toro Rosso and obviously the Red Bull team. And there are hallmarks there, because I do think data is important. When we look at the previous trends, and obviously there's a lot of history about Toto Wolff still ruin missing out on Verstappen, and obviously saying a lot of glowing things to try and entice him to come into this Mercedes. If the car was a lot better, perhaps he'd have a better chance, but I'm not sure if that's really realistic at this point in time. But in terms of the data itself with Antonelli, you made a good point. From the outside, and I agree with this very much so, that Antonelli's reputation is very, very... It exceeds, in my opinion, what he's actually achieved so far. And I mean that with the greatest of respect for the kid, because, you know, he obviously successful in F4 and obviously regional Alpine, skipped F3 entirely and has just gone into F2. And we're already talking about putting him in one of the most coveted seats in the sport, despite Mercedes' struggles at this point in time, all before he's turned 18 years of age. And I often wonder if this has been accelerated, Glenn, by the fact that, you know, not just the Verstappen thing from the past, but also because of Ollie Bearman, his teammate. He had that successful outing with Ferrari in Jeddah, where I think he raised a lot of eyebrows, not just for his own career prospects, but for the prospects of all the young drivers out there in the junior category, saying, look, you just need to give us a chance in one of these good cars and watch us go. And I think because of that, it may have given Mercedes that encouragement that if Kimi can do a little bit of a better job than Ollie does in F2, which so far obviously is going okay, although we have that caveat because Ollie wasn't able to take advantage of the pole position he'd got in Jeddah from the feature race because he couldn't do it. It might have given that Mercedes that extra push to say, you know what, we're going to commit to this project with Kimi Antonelli, see how he goes in the F1 car, and then make the decision then. In my opinion, I think that's been a part of it. But, I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, maybe. I think Bearman and Antonelli are the two standout names on the ladder at the moment. So the fact they both ended up as F2 teammates is quite handy. Bearman, at the time of that F1 debut, would have definitely been more prepared than Antonelli is right now. But obviously, if Mercedes make the decision that they're putting Kimi in the car next year, they will give him all the prep they possibly can. So he will arrive as prepared as a rookie can these days. It's not easy for them anymore. You know, the days of Lewis Hamilton doing, you know, hundreds, thousands of kilometres in McLaren's before, over that winter before his debut, those days are long gone. So you've got to prepare the drivers in a different way. But as Bearman's debut showed, that level of preparation is still good enough, if the driver's talented enough, that they can make an impression quite quickly. So I'd imagine, you know, I think we're going to see Bearman on the grid next year as well. Not in a Ferrari. And yeah, if we see, if those two come in at the same time, it could be one of those things in years to come where you look back and you go, wow, like that was the year that two mega talents arrived at the same time. And that would be really exciting. You know, fresh, fresh blood on the F1 grid, I think, is always a good thing. We obviously had no driver changes for 2024, which is the first time that's ever happened. And I think that's a shame. I like driver changes. I like to see new drivers arriving on the scene. So I'm sure what we had this winter will be a one-off.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And you always like to see a new shiny toy come into this, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, always like those things. Obviously, you know, final thing before we sign off, Glenn, got to ask. You mentioned Carlos Sainz earlier, and this is a driver that in normal circumstances where there might be more opportunities available would probably be high in demand for a lot of teams, no less than the team that he's actually leaving. But of course, the extraordinary circumstances in which he is leaving the team. I'm a bit surprised, and maybe, look, correct me if I'm wrong in this, but I get the impression that Mercedes aren't seriously considering Carlos Sainz, probably because of the fact that Sainz would want a longer-term deal, at least more than 2 years, which obviously is what he wanted at Ferrari. And obviously that gets in the way of the plans for Kimi Antonelli. But despite all of that, if they're not considering Carlos Sainz for next season, should they be considering him?
Well, any team should be considering him. But obviously, yeah, I think you've laid it out right there. If they think Antonelli's worth the punt, then there's not really any point signing Sainz as a seat warmer, because if they say, right, we're going to give you 2 years, we're going to put Antonelli at, say, Williams. If Antonelli's amazing in that first year at Williams, they're going to want to get him in the car the second year anyway. So I think they are thinking, look, if he proves himself to be as good as we think he is, let's just fast track the whole process. I can understand from Sainz's position, he would feel vulnerable in that situation. And like you say, he would want more security. And he probably thinks, if I'm going to drive a not very good Mercedes in 2025 and then potentially be vulnerable for 26, or if it's a 2 year deal, but there's clearly no chance of a future beyond those 2 years, I might as well go and sort of set up camp somewhere else and try to do something more long term. It's a really unfortunate situation because Sainz, I think, just keeps getting better. He keeps improving himself. So it's bizarre that he's going, you know, like, as you kind of said there, a driver like him suddenly turning up on the driver market should have his pick of the available seats. But right now it feels like he doesn't. And that's a shame.
Yeah. And I think it's baffling the seats that do arguably want him aren't really at the level that can entice a driver. And let's be honest, not just of his caliber, but of his age as well. I mean, was he now 28 now, 29, something like that? You know, he's got to be looking at this contract. Obviously, it should have been a Ferrari one, but of course, in the case of Hamilton, you have to make that exception, I suppose. But almost makes me want to put three car grids on the agenda again. It's like, yeah, get a third car just to keep Carlos. But yeah, you're right. He should have a pick of the available seats, but for some reason, it doesn't seem to be the case. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it all plays out. Very exciting stuff. And of course, for Mercedes, the aim for them will obviously to try and figure out how to fix things and try and get themselves back up the pecking order, because a lot of Mercedes fans don't want to be told we're going to have to wait till 2026 and then hope and then potentially be left disappointed that they've got that wrong as well.
I mean, that's the thing. It's all well and good looking at 2026, and there is at least an engine rules change. So Mercedes will be thinking, we've got previous there. That's good for us. And it should potentially bring Red Bull back towards everybody, because it'll be the first Red Bull powertrains engine as well. But ultimately, ground effect rules aren't going anywhere. So Mercedes have still got to work everything out on the car side as well. Because even if you give, if you gave that car an engine advantage as things stand, it's still going to be behind the McLarens, and it's still going to be behind, most of the time, Fernando Alonso's Aston Martin. You know, obviously they'll have a Honda by then, but the key point is Mercedes aren't the best Mercedes-powered team at the moment, so they can't simply rely on, well, hopefully we get an engine advantage again, because they'll have a bit more internal competition this time from any other teams running their engine.
Yeah, I hadn't even pointed that out yet about Aston Martin, how well they're doing. And of course, McLaren as well. Let's not forget how well they've done, although they're going to be moving. Actually, no, they're not. Ignore me. I'm just chatting rubbish at this point. It's gone on long enough already, but no, Glenn, thanks for coming on the show as always. Of course, guys, you can check out Glenn Freeman on his socials at GlennFreeman39 on Twitter. Please be kind. And you can also follow the race as well. We'll put all of the socials in the show notes. And if you haven't already, make sure to check out the Bring Back the V10s podcast. It's a fantastic podcast. And I know I'm being biased here, but I absolutely love it. Glenn, looking forward to season 10. Can't wait to get to see what you guys get up to for that one. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
No, it's been a good chat again. I think you know, the next time we catch up, we might have to talk about somebody else, because I think Mercedes might be in the same situation again of still looking lost. But if they turn it around, we can sing their praises and congratulate them on finally working it all out. But I think that's a way off at the moment.
Absolutely. I promise it won't be Ferrari, because I don't think I'd be able to contain myself with all the questions I've got coming for that one. I think we'll pick a different team or topic of discussion for next time. But of course, guys, thanks for tuning in as always. And yeah, please stay safe, and we'll see you in the next one for the Miami preview. Take care. You can follow us on all our socials. Search at @DNF1_official on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and also leave us a 5-star review. If you're not first, you're probably DNF1.
Sports Social Podcast Network.